This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, May 27th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. We're on the eve of a three-day holiday weekend, and on this edition of Ozarks, we spend time talking about the summer ahead. In just a moment, a preview of a celebration of War Eagle Creek with three people who have ties to the water, including an award-winning filmmaker, an award-winning steward of the creek, and an award-winning musician.
The War Eagle Days, what we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, take place next weekend, Friday and Saturday, June 3rd and 4th, in downtown Huntsville. Also ahead, a garden tour set for tomorrow around Northwest Arkansas, the last of our looks ahead to Wakarusa, and we will announce the winner of the KUAF Wakarusa Giveaway Getaway Contest later this hour.
Disaster relief agencies have been hard-pressed into aiding five tornado-ravaged communities in the two-state region this week. Last night, 75 volunteers turned out for a Northwest Arkansas Red Cross chapter training in Taneytown. Usually fewer than a dozen take the course at a time. They will be helping families devastated by tornadoes which struck Denning, Etna, Altus, and Clarksville east of Fort Smith this week. Northwest Arkansas Red Cross Director Jeffrey Patrick.
You know, the Red Cross is currently providing three meals a day, doing damage assessment, and also providing shelter for those who need it in Ozark. And we're also providing feeding and disaster assessment in the Clarksville area. For people interested in volunteering with the Red Cross, they can go to redcrossnwa.org/volunteer. And if they want to volunteer with cleanup, they can contact the Franklin County Office of Emergency Management or the Johnson County Office of Emergency Management.
If you're interested in helping out over the Memorial Day holiday weekend, you can call the Franklin County Emergency Management at 479-667-4909. In Johnson County, 754-3967. On Thursday, Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe declared seven Arkansas counties disaster areas due to damage from this week's severe weather: Baxter, Benton, Carroll, Franklin, Johnson, Marion, and Washington counties. To learn about volunteering for the Red Cross classes, or if you're interested in making cash donations, you can go to redcrossnwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, three gentlemen who have a hand in War Eagle Days that takes place June 3rd and 4th in Huntsville. From my left around the table, John Two Hawks.
It's good to be here.
Thank you, John. A Grammy-nominated musician who has a flute with him, so yes. I assume that later.
You got it.
All right, perfect. Emmy Award winner, Larry Foley, who co-produced the movie.
That's right. Bridge to War Eagle.
Along with Dale.
Carpenter.
And then we have Robert Swain, who has helped organize.
Actually helped conceive and tried to bail out several times.
Let's talk about War Eagle Days. It's an event that, I guess at its heart, Robert, is designed to let people know the importance of War Eagle.
It's always been my belief. You know, when we talk rivers and maintaining rivers, it always takes an agricultural turn. You know, what the farmers are doing to the streams. And we don't see much of that, you know, to the degree they used to. What we see now, if you go to a large city and talk to people that were there 70 years ago, they talk about these beautiful streams, and you look and they're just concrete containers for drain water for the streets. They were forgotten. And that's the thing, looking ahead, that I see as the thing that is our job. That is a mission that we have, is our generation now, generations to come, that they don't forget about these streams.
And this event is next weekend.
It's the 3rd and the 4th.
Okay. And what are you doing to help make sure, like you said, that other generations don't forget about the importance?
Well, up to this point, we've done everything we can to get people on the river. This year, the fifth year, we were very blessed to have a documentary about the War Eagle Dine, and Dale Carpenter and Larry Foley. It is something that people have to see. I've been to two of the screenings. It absolutely, people walk out of there nearly weeping about what a resource that we have.
Well, now that you've brought that up, Larry, let me ask you, because people know as The Buffalo Flows, mm-hmm. the award-winning documentary did. The buffalo is very well-known nationally.
Right.
The war eagle is not as well-known.
Right.
But there are bluffs along it that are, I'm not going to get into favorite rivers or waterways, but are very beautiful. What are some of the stories you tell in that documentary?
Well, Kyle, Bridge to War Eagle is actually a complementary film to The Buffalo Flows. The buffalo and the big piney and the white and the kings and
Mulberry.
Eagle Creek, Mulberry, all fall off the same mountaintop. And that's, of course, where our story begins. It actually begins at the mill, and then we kind of go into that. But The Buffalo is a story of a protected river, nation's first national river, and the story of what we protected. The War Eagle is a story about an unprotected stream that flows into the water supply for all of northwest Arkansas. And, of course, you know my work enough to know that there are stories. And there's a story of the War Eagle Bridge and the War Eagle Mill. There's the story of Rufus Stevens and his family cabin, which is where his dad taught him to fly fish and where he taught his son to fly fish. Rufus has lost his son and his father, and now he goes and sort of carries their memory with him to their very special place. It's the story of Robert Swain here, our pal, the Pick King, who is a War Eagle steward and who is involved as much as anybody in conservation of War Eagle Creek, and it is a conservation film. There's a story of Ron Duncan, who's an Arkansas Game and Fish Commissioner, who was a teacher for many years in the Springdale school system, who started the Hooked on Fishing program in a junior high civics project that grew into a national program. And certainly a little bit about the War Eagle Crafts Fair and the story of the water supply that about a third of the water supply that feeds Beaver Lake is War Eagle Creek. So those are a few of the stories, and we are telling people that it is a complementary film to The Buffalo Flows.
Now, there's a lot of stories that you're telling in there. What originally attracted you to War Eagle as a subject?
Well, I was on my way to Monticello, Arkansas, when a friend of mine, Ellen Fennell of Audubon, Arkansas, called me up and said, "Love The Buffalo Flows. Would you be interested in doing a story about War Eagle Creek?" And, of course, the first question I had was, maybe, but what is the story, or what are the stories? And she began telling me about Rufus Stevens, whose son had been murdered in some horrible random event in Texas. And they had started this foundation to memorialize Rufus Stevens Jr., who was about to begin a conservation career following in his father's footsteps. And we began talking on the phone, and I immediately thought of this iconic image that is War Eagle Bridge leading to the grist mill. And while we were talking, I said, you know, there is probably no more iconic scene in all of Arkansas than War Eagle Bridge and Mill. And I thought, that's an interesting way that we can frame the entire story. Now, one of the things that I've noticed, and y'all have probably noticed the same thing, is when you go over to the mill, invariably there are people taking photographs of it, and lots of times artists painting portraits of that mill. And when I began doing my preliminary research, David Pryor told me that the first date he ever had with Barbara is he picked her up from her home on Mount Sequoia, and they drove over to War Eagle, and they walked across the bridge together. And my friend Richard Davies in Parks and Tourism, he's director of Parks and Tourism and one of the funders of the film, and he told me that he asked his wife to marry him on War Eagle Bridge. So I thought, you know, it would be interesting because you've seen all these artist renderings, and I thought it would be interesting to kind of tie an artist in who's painting a portrait. So a guy whose work I appreciated from afar for a long time is an artist from Fort Smith named John Bell. And I knew of John's work, and because there's a portrait of the depot in Van Buren that hangs above my folks' fireplace in their Fort Smith home. My grandfather was a railroad man. And so I saw that John was going to have an exhibition of his work at the library, John Bell being a U of A grad. And I went over there, and I think I might have remembered that John had some kind of a disability. But I didn't learn until later that John doesn't actually paint with his hands, and I won't tip off the whole story. But I went and talked with John and his wife Maxine, just lovely, lovely people, and pitched the idea about what would you think about painting a picture of the bridge leading to the mill. And John said, well, you know, I've painted a picture of the mill with the bridge in the background. I think I might like that. So we tied John and Maxine in as they're at the beginning stages taking photographs there, and we sort of used that whole story to frame the story that we call Bridge to War Eagle. Now, John said something very funny, I think, at the screening that we had at the Fort Smith Library, is he said, you know, the whole time that I did this, that people don't know, is that I had to pretend to be a handicapped artist. And his work is revealed at the end of the film, and we just think it turned out. I told John, I said, you know, I think these things up from time to time, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. In this particular case, it worked out exactly the way that I hoped it would. And it works out because John and Maxine are so sweet, and John's comments are so relevant, and his image as it reveals itself in the end of the film is just perfect.
So many stories with War Eagle, and Friday night, people who come to War Eagle Days on the Huntsville Square will hear perhaps the original, the first story that's associated with War Eagle. And John, you'll be telling that story, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I will. And I think it's important whenever we're kind of paying tribute and honoring and giving thought to these places that we live, to go back and really honor those stories and the history of the land. And of course, inevitably, the history of all this land here in North America is indelibly tied to the Native American people who have called this place home for tens of thousands of years. And so the original stories that come with War Eagle are, of course, Native American. And so this is an old place, and it's a place that for indigenous people held a special place in the heart of Native people. And so there is an old story, and I'm not going to give that away here either.
No, you don't want? No.
But there is an old story that's kind of interesting because it's about a young man and a woman that he was in love with and what happened to her and then what inevitably happened to him because of that. And it's interesting because that story isn't very well known, and I think it should be. It's not, you don't see it all the time in print. As a matter of fact, when I first became acquainted with War Eagle, and I began to ask, because, of course, when I heard the name War Eagle, I said, well, now, come on, this has got to be some kind of a Native American origin. And so, boy, it was amazing how many people didn't know. And so after a lot of digging, a lot of asking, I was fortunate enough to find some very reliable sources and discover what actually was the story behind the name War Eagle and where it came from. And so it's an incredible story. And what's interesting is a few generations later, when some European people began to come into the area, there was a family that lived here that has a similar story. That actually has to do with a man and his wife and how much he loved her and what happened to her and then what happened to him because of that. And it was very similar. And so it's kind of like, in a way, a cycle. And there's this kind of connection between the people and those they love and this place we call War Eagle now. And so it's I'm honored to have been asked to come and to participate and to offer, in a way, the Native American voice to this story, and to be able to share that with people on the evening that we're going to be doing showing the documentary and sharing my music as a part of that as well. So I'm really honored to be able to be included in that. I think it's important, too, that, again, whenever there are stories of history in this country being told, that we begin with the Native American part of that story, because I think it's it goes without saying that if you don't begin there, you're missing a very important part of the history of the land and the people who have called these places home.
The film, the story, and your performance are all Friday night. Is that right, Robert?
They'll be Friday night. And I promise that anyone that is sitting there will sit there for some time when it ends, just trying to get it all in their heart. I mean, it will leave you that way.
John Two Hawks, you have a flute in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
Yeah. I want to, before I play a little bit on the flute, I want to also say that, you know, it's important that, you know, as I said earlier, it's important that we tell the Native American stories that go with the places that we're telling the history of and honoring. And having said that, it's also important to understand that it's a human story. And all of us feel these connections to this land, you know, we all do. And up to the present day, you know, and so it's, we're all in a way Native. You see what I mean? To this land, we're connected to it, and that ground, it really is a part of us. And so I admire folks like Larry who can do a documentary that tell a story about water, about where that water comes from, mm-hmm. about the mountaintop that it rolls off from, and about the people who live there by it and how that place actually gets into you. We live in a world that's so separated from the natural environment that we really are part of. You know, we're connected to the earth and the fire and the water and the wind. That's, we're made of that stuff. And so when we can touch it and get close to the actual sources of it, we find our own balance. We find our own identity, really. And so it's really, to do stories, to tell stories like this with film and with music and with stories are, I think, a very important part of the human experience. And so I'm going to be playing my my wind instruments
outside.
Outside, yeah. And so we're gonna ask the wind spirits to be kind to us that day and give us decent weather and so that everyone can come out and everyone can take part in this and experience this. So it's going to be a real honor to be able to see this documentary kind of unveiled in a way to the people there. And then right after that, I'm going to be doing my my own musical performance, which also comes with video as well. So it's going to be kind of a nice segue and a nice, I think, a real powerful way to tell the story of War Eagle. So I'm going to share a little bit on one of my flutes here for you to kind of give people a little taste of what to expect. Thank you.
I was watching mostly your hands, but I was also watching Larry Foley's eyes watch your hands. You're always something of a filmmaker, right?
Well, it's some kind of psychological malady, I guess. By going to the movies, I'm thinking about how they put it together.
So let's see. It's War Eagle Days, and that's the 3rd and 4th. That's a Friday and Saturday.
Right.
John Tuwalks, you'll perform?
Absolutely.
Friday night?
Friday night, yes.
And it's going to be quite a performance.
Yeah, I'll be doing, actually, before the video, I'll be doing actually a talk where I kind of tell the story, the Native American story, if you will, of War Eagle. Then there'll be the documentary, which I believe is about a half an hour. Is that correct?
26 minutes and 44 seconds.
Close like enough. A man who spent time in the editing.
That's right. And that's right. I knew he'd have the answer to that. And then after that is when I do my actual concert performance.
All right.
And we ask that everybody bring a lawn chair, the most comfortable lawn chair they own. Mm-hmm. So that guarantees you a front row seat if you get there quick enough on Friday evening.
If people want to know more?
The Chamber of Commerce of Huntsville, what we hope is that everyone will bring their campers and canoes and kayaks, call Withrow Springs State Park, rent a place to go up there and hang out for the whole weekend. There'll be a lot of folks there talking floating and canoeing and telling their best stories on whatever stream in Arkansas. And
which, by the way, let me say something about that. Withrow Springs is in the film, and it's a beautiful place.
Oh, I love Withrow Springs.
State Park, and I bet a lot of folks who are listening have never been there. Well, they ought to go there.
Absolutely.
Because it's a gorgeous Ozark park.
It sure is.
It really is.
It's definitely.
Larry, if people want to know more about the film?
Well, if you would like a copy, you can get in touch with the U of A Press, University of Arkansas Press. AETN will have its broadcast premiere in August during its August campaign, fundraising campaign. And Robert was asking me where it's going to be for sale. I guess I should ask U of A Press about that.
Okay.
But they're finished now. We've had them for a couple of weeks, so they're out.
All right. John, if people want to know about your releases, your latest CD, or where you'll
we're
be?
We're actually on tour right now with my 20th album, which is Vision Seeker. That album is, of course, available everywhere. They can get it on my website, johntwohawks.com. It's available on iTunes, Amazon, everywhere you can find it on the internet.
Robert Swain, Larry Foley, John Twohawks, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This is wonderful.
We'll have a bit more from Robert Swain on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large. He's known as the Pick King, as in guitar picks. How he became a guitar pick king Monday, Memorial Day, on Ozarks at Large. This is an Ozarks at Large for the beginning of a three-day weekend. Ahead, a Wakarusa Festival giveaway, and Becca Bacon-Martin from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers with the rest of the holiday weekend roster of events. But right now,
this Saturday, the Omni Peace Center for Peace, Justice, and Ecology will host its sixth annual Peace Gardens Tour in Fayetteville, where the work of local sculptor Hank Kaminsky will be unveiled. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich visits with two peace gardeners and the artist to provide us this preview.
Despite several rounds of flooding rains, Marie Riley's not deterred from cultivating her spring garden, which standing beneath her wisteria-covered arbor at her home on North Olive, overlooking her garden, named after Julia Ward Howe.
Who was a prominent American abolitionist, social activist, and poet, most famous as the author of The Battle Hymn of the Republic. My garden is a garden of evolution. It has evolved over approximately 10 years, and the plants that you'll find in my garden I call my Darwin garden, because they are plants that have survived, and then I divide them and they continue to survive. And so I like to refer it as Darwin gardening. Oh, the plants are fantastic. I have what's called Japanese pedicites, and it would be approximately 3 feet by about 2 feet each leaf. And it is a plant that comes back every year. And I have a lot of hostas. I have Jacob's Ladder, Solomon's Seal. Recently, this is my most exciting addition to the garden, is a new sun garden. My garden is predominantly shade, which is, some people think, very difficult, but I prefer shade gardening. I deal with texture, various colors of green, browns, burgundies, and recently I added a sun garden, so that's a new adventure for me, incorporating dahlias, roses, delphinium, daisies, so it's nice to have a burst of color.
Marie says for her, gardening's a very private experience, taking her away from her fast-paced position as U of A Network Client Services Manager into a mindful world filled with peaceful handwork. The Omni Peace Gardens Network was established 6 years ago to celebrate the relationship between nature, inner peace, and world peace. The garden tour runs from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., but then later in the day, Marie will host a special reception featuring a Babette's Feast of Savory Hors d'oeuvres and Sweets in honor of the unveiling of new work by Fayetteville sculptor Hank Kaminsky.
Titled, You Are Standing on Sacred Ground. And I think it ties in very nicely with the Peace Garden tour and Hank being our village sculptor. always been very dedicated to peace projects, and you know, I've always admired his work, and I'm a big supporter, and I want the community to come out and show their support for Hank, and so by bringing his works to my garden, they'll have the added treat of being able to see his recent project.
Hank Kaminsky says the project is the culmination of 3 years of effort.
I call the project the Sacred Ground Project because it uses the phrase, you are standing on sacred ground, as a bridge to the community from my work to the uses that the community might put to my work to. It uses the phrase, you are standing on sacred ground, as part of the study of energy flow through fields. That's really the kind of interest that I have in my work. I believe we all live within certain kinds of fields, and I'd like to explore that. I'd like to play with that. And this phrase popped out as I was working in about the third year of the work, just about a little bit last year, as being a way that I could be of some use to the community as an artist. Very important to me. I left New York City because the community was so isolated and separate from the mainstream of the community. I grew up in Brooklyn, and those people didn't know from art. What do they need art for? And now what I'm saying is we all need art, and this project is a way for me to give and to explore my interests as an artist.
The Sacred Ground Project follows Kaminsky's motif, carved words in various languages on cast stone in various limited editions.
Well, the best way to put it is that you're walking in a place where you revive your spirit. Could be the woods, could be the desert. But you have gone there for the special purpose of reviving your spirit. And you see on the ground this rock. It's a stone that looks like it's been etched away. And you take this stone and you pick it up and you put it in your garden, because this stone, which says on it, in words, in English language, that you are standing on sacred ground, sounds good to you. You like the idea. You want your place, the place that you live, to be sacred. So you put this piece of sculpture up. And what we'll have here at Marie's garden, there'll be a number of sculptures that I'll have on display. But one piece is being permanently installed in her garden. It's a double-sided slab of stone, circular slab of stone, mounted on a pyramidal base. Concrete. The whole thing is concrete. All these sculptures were designed to be outdoors and used outdoors. And so this piece of sculpture will sit right over here in the garden at the entrance to the garden for both Marie and for the people who will come here. And it says on it, you are standing on sacred ground.
And there will be lots of sacred ground covered in this year's Omni Peace Garden Tour. Along with Julia Ward Howe Garden, several others will be showcased. There's Anne Reichert's Peace and Serenity Garden Stroll on Lake Sequoia Drive, the Peace Trees Garden on Cleveland Avenue, the Garden of Peace and Tranquility on Prospect, the World Wetland Peace Prairie on South Duncan Avenue, the Conscious Living Garden on Weddington, Bluebirds of Peace Garden, and the very quirky No Plant Left Behind Peace Garden on Davidson Street, designed by singer, songwriter, piano tuner Emily Cates. This will be her fourth time participating in the Peace Garden Tour.
The Omni Garden Tour is always lots of fun because some of the really flashy master gardeners in this town, you know, they compete to get into some of these other garden tours. Well, here at Omni, we pretty much welcome anybody who wants to have their garden on display. But as it happens, I have a really nice garden. It's small, but it's sort of, I pretty much have my whole yard front and back as flower gardens, except for, of course, the driveway. And also I have the world's smallest lawn. It's about the size of sort of a medium-sized tabletop, and I trim it with a scissors. And the reason I do that is because larkspur comes up in it, and I don't want to cut down the larkspur. And this year the larkspur, which I have in other parts of the garden, will be blooming. The peonies, unfortunately, I think are going to be over with by the 28th. Same with the irises. But I've got coreopsis. I've got cone flowers coming up. The larkspur, some daisies. There's a variety of stuff. I know the names of a lot of my stuff, but I don't know the names of everything. But I know what they look like and what's happening. It's going to be really beautiful, and I hope the weather's good. And also, you know, since I'll be there, and I think I'll have a couple of friends helping me, so occasionally I might sit on the porch and play a song or two. And with any luck, Drew, my boyfriend, will be there with his banjo. We might have some banjo playing. And as the literature perhaps says, I'm going to have a free complimentary white wine tasting starting at noon for as long as the wine lasts. I'll have four bottles of my favorite white wine, and people can just have samples of all of them. That alone is worth a $10 fee for the Omni Garden Tour. So I'm excited.
The Peace Garden self-guided tour to support the work of the Omni Center for Peace, Justice, and Ecology is scheduled between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. this Saturday, shine or rain. And a reception for Hank Kaminsky's Sacred Ground Unveiling will take place from 4 to 7 p.m. at the home of Marie Riley at 525 North Olive. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's Friday, May 27th, almost the beginning of a three-day weekend. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And on this edition of Ozarks at Large, talking about what's happening this coming weekend, music, events, and more. And with us is Becca Bacon-Martin, who better to tell us what's happening this weekend. She is the editor of Northwest Arkansas
of
newspapers.
No.
But of What's Up.
Found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And it's all about music this weekend. So if you're not the concert-going type, I'm going to fail you. I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
Well, we've had a lot of theater, so it's good to spread it out a little bit.
But it's all about music. Tonight is Primus.
Yes.
At 7:30 at the Arkansas Music Pavilion in Fayetteville. Primus vocalist and bassist Les Claypool describes the band's music as psychedelic polka. Kevin Kinder, the music writer for What's Up, says it starts with rock and includes elements of freak, folk, funk, and acid jazz. And if none of that means anything to you, here's a clue. They wrote the theme song for South Park, the TV series.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They broke up in 2000, got back together in 2010, and they have a new album called Green Naga Hide coming out this summer. Tickets are $27. Should be fun. Also tonight, if you happen to be heading toward Little Rock, it's the first night of Riverfest. Widespread Panic and Poison are the headliners tonight. Admission is $30 for a three-day pass, which will also get you in to see Blue October, Papa Roach, Bare Naked Ladies, and the Charlie Daniels Band on Saturday, Digital Underground,
Nelly,
an REO Speedwagon, and a fireworks show on Sunday, and a ton of Arkansas favorites like Sugar Free All-Stars, Trout Fishing in America, and Big Smith throughout the weekend. You can find out more at riverfestarkansas.com. If you're in town on Saturday, Artemis is releasing a new compilation CD, a bunch of new music from Arkansas. There are 12 bands included on the compilation. Among them are Damn Arkansan, Sean Fresh, and Basement Brew. And they will perform live during the album release party that starts at 9 o'clock Saturday at Smoke and Barrel Tavern. It's $3 to get in, and that includes a copy of the CD.
That's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, something completely different. From 2 to 4 at the Fayetteville Public Library, Claire Deedles is doing a piano program on Arkansas composers.
Yes.
Florence Price and William Grant Still. And that's free. On Monday, Dillinger Escape Plan plays at George's Majestic Lounge at 7. They've been on Conan. Mm-hmm. They're described as metalcore.
Okay.
Go with that. Admission is $16. And you can go from there to Smoke and Barrel to see a band called Pure X from Texas. They're kind of country,
mm-hmm.
kind of not. Also on the bill are Silent Diane and the White Creeps.
Okay.
And the show starts at 9 o'clock. On Tuesday, it's shareholders time.
Woohoo!
So there you go. A lot of Walmart shareholders will be in town.
And a lot of music. Mm-hmm. Darius Rucker and Lady Antebellum play at 7 at Bud Walton Arena. If you've been around here for a while, you know the drill. Guests of Walmart and shareholders first, Walmart associates next. If there are seats remaining, the public will be admitted after 6:45.
And it is how
free.
Much? Free, okay.
And that's on Tuesday.
That's on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Walmart shareholders, again, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
That's kind of exciting.
That's a good one.
7 o'clock at Bud Walton Arena, same drill. Go get in line.
What time do people start queuing up?
Depends on the band.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sometimes really early in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I know this guy who would like to see Bob Seger.
Maybe a guy named Kyle Kellums.
I'm just saying. Okay. What time would this guy get in line?
I'm thinking that's the one that's going to fill up faster because they've only got one headliner, and usually that second show is a big headliner. Like the Eagles were here a couple years ago, and I didn't even make it to the door.
What time did you get in line?
5 or 6.
Yeah.
And they were just people.
I'd go mid-afternoon if you really wanted to see it.
Take a book.
Hang out.
Or have somebody hold your place for you.
Talk to people.
No, that's not allowed.
You don't want to do that.
Why not?
That's not allowed.
Oh, okay.
That'll go poorly.
Oh, my friends are nicer.
It's not your friends you're worried about.
I've had better experiences.
Okay. Okay, if she does that, it's not my fault or Kyle's.
Right.
All right, on Thursday, we're not done yet. Mm-hmm. The Eureka Springs Blues Weekend starts at noon.
Yes, it does.
Headliner is Coco Montoya next Friday and Elvin Bishop next Saturday. And on Thursday, there's this little music festival that happens down on Arkansas 23.
Wakarusa.
It has a silly name and about 20,000 people who are going to come to hear the music.
Mm-hmm.
Here are some of the bands. North Mississippi All-Stars.
As a duo, I'm not quite sure which member of the band will not be there.
I don't know, but it's interesting.
But it's labeled as North Mississippi All-Stars Duo.
A band that you love, Grace Potter and the Nocturnals.
Yes, I do.
Umphrey's McGee, a band called Hallucinogen. Those are all on Thursday. On Friday, Lucero, J.J. Gray and Mofro, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Reason to go right there. They had my favorite album of last year.
STS9.
Yeah.
My Morning Jacket.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Interview in the New York Times this week.
And?
Interviewed by Kevin Kinder this week, coming out next week.
Right.
Ghostland Observatory on next Saturday, Mumford & Sons, Thievery Corporation on June the 5th. EOTO is the headliner. Tickets are $184 for all 4 days, but you can also get daily tickets. You can find out more at wakarusa.com and follow Kevin Kinder on his blog at nwatunedin.com. He'll be there. You'll know all about it. Mm-hmm. Now, if music does not hit the right note with you.
Mm-hmm. So to speak.
So to speak. A couple of suggestions. Tonight is the Grow a Film Contest results.
We'll find out the winner.
At the Nadine Baum Studios. It starts at 6:30 and it's free. Part of the Artist Fair Festival. Tomorrow, again part of the Artist Fair Festival, a children's program called Kindur.
Right.
It's about Icelandic sheep.
Yes.
But it's theater, dance. They've been here before.
Interactive. TPO. The children that go to this, they're part of the show.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
It does.
9:30, 11, and 2 on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $6. Tomorrow is the Omni Peace Garden Tour.
Yes, which we hear about this edition of Ozarks at Large.
Had the best time, went out to Lake Sequoia and talked to a lovely lady named Ann Reichert about her garden, which is not your grandma's garden. So there's a little bit of everything on the tour. That's 10 to 3 Saturday, $10. The May Festival Gallery Stroll is Saturday night in Eureka Springs from 6 to 9. And on Monday at 3 o'clock, Track Theater is presenting The Tempest, Shakespeare in the Park, at Gully Park in Fayetteville. It's free and has a great cast of people like Virginia and Justin Schauer, Asa Timms, Jordan Haynes.
Should be a lot of fun. Free.
And that ought to keep you busy until I talk to you again.
Becca, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
In just a few minutes, we'll draw the winner for the KUAF Wakarusa giveaway getaway. 2 free 4-day passes to one lucky winner. This is Ozarks at Large. Speaking of Wakarusa, all week, Kevin Kinder, who covers music for Northwest Arkansas newspapers, has been previewing what he plans to do while he attends Wakarusa on top of Mulberry Mountain. And at this point in the preview, we've made it to the final day, Sunday.
And we start out, I'm going to catch Benjamin Del Shreve, local guys who play a lot here, but they're also a lot of fun. They're going to play at 1 o'clock. Carry Nation and the Speakeasy comes from Kansas, where Carry Nation was from, and they're going to play a set. That's going to lead into the Stone Foxes about 3:30, and I think they're a lot of fun, too. I've watched a couple of their clips on YouTube, and just really kind of mid-tempo pop And it, you know, it sounds good. So, and sometimes that's all you have to go on. You hear a song and say, well,
worth a shot.
Let's go. One band that is going to be really weird. They're going to play at 5 o'clock on Sunday. It's a group called Here Come the Mummies. They dress as mummies. As you might have guessed, or maybe not. I don't know. They play. It's a, I would consider them funk or soul. They have a horn section. They're pretty heavy on guitar, and they try to create sort of a dance party. They don't tell you a lot about the band. If you research them, you don't find a lot of information. One of the popular internet rumors is that they're a group of musicians in bands who don't want the publicity. They just want to go out and have a rocking good time.
Are they one of the bands that all have the same surname? Are they like so-and-so mummy?
I don't know that they have that.
Okay.
But that's 5 o'clock. That's going to lead into a set by P-Lander Z, comes all the way over from Japan, and there is actually a pretty strong international presence at the festival. But P-Lander Z is sort of music for anime. It's really peppy. It's really cartoon oriented.
Yeah, I was going to say, for people who aren't familiar, anime is Japanese animation.
Right.
It's people with big eyes.
Right. It's that kind of that. It's sort of the soundtrack for that kind of music. So that'll be fun. And see, you know, this is one of the great things about festivals too. You know, we've got pop rock. We went through alt country already on Sunday. Now we have the funk from Here Comes the Mummies, Japanese rock. And then we get into something like classic reggae from Toots and the Maytals.
Legendary band.
Legendary band. That's at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. And that's, I think it's really neat that they're part of the lineup.
So is that how you close it out, if they're starting at 11?
Well, they start at 8.
Oh, they start at 8.
Yes, 8 to 9:30. That may be how I close it out. I do have to work on Monday morning, much to my chagrin. And then there are some more options even later than that. Zugma is playing their electronic rock. I haven't had the chance to see them yet, but I know at last year's Wakarusa Fest that I had a lot of people raving about that show. So that's, and then there's a few acts that start about 10:30, but that's just about all I'll know I'll be able to handle.
Now, if you go for the whole thing, if you're a person and you have paid the whole kit and caboodle, and you're done at midnight, you can still camp out that Sunday night.
You sure can.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to be off-site by noon on Monday.
Okay.
And you can actually arrive, I believe it's midnight on Thursday morning. So
the end of Wednesday night.
The end of Wednesday night, they're going to start letting people into the venue.
Close to a sellout?
It's going to be. The first year in Arkansas, which would have been 2009, they had about 10,000. They doubled that last year, right about 20,000. Wakarusa's a little bit skittish to announce exactly how many people they have there. I'm told it's going to be more, so 22 or 23,000, and that's about 20,000 in ticket sales to fans. And then by the time you add 100 bands at 4 people apiece, and you add support staff, you add security, vendors, volunteers,
press,
all of these kind, you're really pushing, I would guess, about 25,000 people.
If someone's listening to this right now, And they said, oh, okay, I've got to do it this year.
Right.
And still a chance for you to call up and get tickets?
Yeah, there is. Although you cannot get terribly close to the venue with camping. The way it works is camping goes on sale and it's in different tiers. And so to accompany your ticket, you have to also purchase a camping pass. And one of the ways to do that is, you know, to pick the main stage camping, which is right around the venue. And then there's auxiliary camping, and they have shuttle buses that pull people from those places to the main venue. And they've actually reworked the transportation system to try to get the people there quicker than they did last year. Some people choose the auxiliary camping because it's a little less struggling for the right word here. It's a little less crazy than the main venue camping. And so the main stage camping area is sold out. So is the second tier, which is called Westwood. But there are riverside camping areas and places. And again, they shuttle people back and forth. So, but not only do they have the four-day passes, but catering to folks here in Northwest Arkansas who may not be able to get away for all 4 days, they have Friday, Saturday, Sunday passes. They have Saturday day passes where you can show up as soon as you can on Saturday, watch all of Saturdays, and then be able to stay Sunday and into Monday. So those kinds of options exist, and it's actually family-friendly also, they tell me. 12 years and younger, get a free ticket.
And you'll be blogging.
You bet. We're going to, myself and one other person from my office, we're going to file some video stories. We're going to review at least a bulk of the concerts that we see, and we're going to do that through our newspaper's live music blog, which is called Tuned In, and you can catch that at www.nwatunedin.com.
Have a great time.
I will.
And let me live vicariously through you.
We will. You know, if you can read all of the blogs and photos as those things happen.
All right. Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Kyle.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Anthony Necker-Hayda.
And we are in a different place than usual. We are in Rhonda Dillard's office because we are about to draw for the winner to the, Rhonda, what's the official title?
The official title is the Wakarusa Getaway Giveaway.
All right. This includes 2 4-day passes and camping to Wakarusa.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting.
People were able to enter online, and we are about to draw.
Mm-hmm. We had a little over 300 entries.
There you go.
All right. Number of winners, pick one, and here we go. Computer does the picking.
So it's all random.
It is Ryan Craig from the University of Arkansas.
All right, Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan, congratulations.
Okay, so Ryan Craig, will we call him?
We will call him. Let's pull him up. There he is. We will give him a call and let him know, and we will have his name at the will call window at Wakarusa, and he can walk right up and get his tickets and his armbands and go and have a huge time.
All right, Ryan, congratulations.
Thanks, Rhonda.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Malco Theaters, featuring Stephen Sondheim's company with the New York Philharmonic. This concept musical was shot in April and features Neil Patrick Harris, Patti LuPone, Stephen Colbert, John Cryer, and more. 4 screenings will be held from June 15th through the 21st. Tickets and information available at malco.com. And AY Magazine, about you, offering information about style, life, money, well-being, and more, including videos on cooking and gardening. A restaurant guide is available, as well as information about places to live. More information, including the AY About You app, is available at aymag.com.
A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Artist Point.
Artist Point, over by Mountainburg.
By Mountainburg.
On Old Highway 71.
There you go.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Don't forget, weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9.
Mm-hmm.
Back with new shows beginning next week, every day at noon.
Mm-hmm. Have a good weekend.
All right, and have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.